the universe, the one who made heaven and earth, condescending and taking on a body. Talk about a light bulb in the heart of New York City. We're talking about an infinite God that is embodied now in the flesh of a man out of Zion. He walked those streets of Jerusalem. But his purpose in even identifying with that city was not to exalt the city, but it was there where that temple was built that God purposed that he should lay down his life and shed his blood and fulfill everything. Be the high priest, be the sacrifice, be the altar, be the temple, all things in him. Now when you see it that way, doesn't verse 3 now just open up like a flower? Where is the Lord's blessing out of Zion? It's in this one that he brought into Zion. And where he suffered and died. But he didn't suffer and die to restore the glory of old Israel. Like so many think. Well, if he's the Messiah, then it must be that he's going to restore Israel to its former glory. Nope. There is an Israel of which the world does not know. The word Israel means prince with God. It means to be raised up off the dunghill and to be placed as a prince with God. Who is that Israel? But those sinners from every tribe, nation, and tongue. Not just the Jewish nation, but one from every tribe, nation, tongue in the world that Christ has redeemed by his precious blood and made to be a kingdom of priests forever. And that's where God's blessing is, out of Zion. I'm mindful as I read this, this conflict between Saul and David is really a picture of a conflict between Satan and Christ, between works and grace. Never the twain shall meet or get along. You can't compromise. There's no compromise. And therefore, there will always be this conflict. But here's a word of hope that we read in 2 Samuel 3, and this is why I like that title, God's Will Be Done, regardless of the conflict. It says, now there was long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. That Saul's already dead. Three of his four sons are dead. And yet the conflict continues. But here, verse 1, David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. That's how God's purposed it. When I read that, I thought about what Christ said, that I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The picture there is not of the church under siege and the gates of hell being cast against the church. No, it's just the opposite. When Christ said, I will build my church, he laid that foundation in his death, the chief cornerstone. And just as we read in Revelation 12, there's no turning that back. Yes, Satan, by God's purpose, continues to persecute that church, which is the body. But he cannot decapitate the head. The head's in glory. So whatever God ordains is done to the church as a body, it doesn't destroy Christ or his work or his church. When we understand that this kingdom appointed is a kingdom that is based on and founded in and earned by Christ and that righteousness that he came and established and God loved and accepted. See, we're accepted in the beloved. It's not each individual trying to win acceptance from God in this kingdom. No, we're accepted already in the beloved. So that's that righteousness. But what follows righteousness? Peace. Don't you love that word? We're not talking about a sentimental peace here, but we're talking about reconciliation. The kingdom of God, based on this righteousness that Christ came and earned. And that's why the kingdom was appointed to him. You see, it was decreed from eternity, but he had to come and earn the right. I know that sounds maybe difficult for some, but he had to work out this righteousness in the flesh. He had to satisfy God the Father that he might be that appointed heir of this kingdom. And he did it. And the result is peace. We're not talking about an internal sentiment of peace here. We're talking about a legal satisfaction with God. I'll tell you, when the Lord opened my eyes to see this, my soul rested.